Harper Audio presents Feedback by Robeson Wells, performed by Michael Goldstrom. Chapter 1. Jane stared back at me, motionless. She was older than I remembered, older than the Jane I knew. Her skin, which had always been smooth and perfect, was now freckled, and her cheeks and nose were red from the cold. "I thought you died," she said again. I shook my head, too startled to speak. She stepped forward, and I flinched. I knew what she was. She may not have been Jane 117C, but she was something like that. An older version, another experiment. An enemy. Becky was out in the forest, alone and dying, and I'd walked right into a trap. "They're going to be looking for you," she said. "It won't take them long." I paused, staring back at her. She was just like Mason, or Carrie, or Mouse, or any of the others from the school. She didn't know what she was. She thought she was helping me. I took a step back. "Don't go," she said. "We can hide you." "No." I picked up the tarp that lay at my feet, the one I'd come into this barn to steal, something to keep Becky warm. I backed away from Jane toward the door. "Wait," she said, pleading. "It's not true," I said, grasping the old wooden handle. "Everything you think you know, it's a lie." I didn't know what else to say. How could you tell a person she wasn't real? "Wait," Jane said again. "I know. I know about the robots." She unzipped her thin cotton coat and pulled it off. She held up her forearm. From the pocket of her dress, she pulled out a box cutter and held the blade in the flame of the lantern. The ridge of her arm, where the bone met the skin, was speckled with dozens of thin scars, some smooth and healed and pink, but others scabbed and new. I couldn't speak. "I'm human," Jane said. "We all are." She pulled the blade from the fire and touched it to her skin. Chapter 2. "You can do this," I said, my arm around Becky's trembling body, trying to keep her on her feet. "Just over the next hill and we'll rest again."
"I don't understand,"
she repeated, her words starting to slur. As cold as it was outside, she was hot with fever. I could only guess that infection was setting into the vicious wound in her arm. "We have to keep going," I said. She nodded, but even that seemed half-conscious, like she was losing the strength to hold her head up.
50 miles, she breathed.
"We don't know that," I said. "That's just what we've always guessed. For all we know, we'll hit a highway in 2 or 3 miles. Her eyes were closing while we walked. She was drifting away. She'd lost too much blood.
"Where'd you get the tarp?" Becky asked.
She'd already asked that, twice now, and I'd tried to explain. "There's a town," I answered.
"Why don't we go there?"
"We can't."
"You talk to them, the people at the town?"
"Yes, we can't go there." She was slowing, and I tried to help her walk faster.
"Do they know about the school?"
She slipped on a patch of loose leaves. I caught her, but she cried out when I grabbed her tight. The t-shirt that was wrapped around her wound was soaked dark with blood.
"I'm not going to make it," she mumbled.
"Yes, you are."
"Leave me here."
Becky slid to her knees, her eyes opened, wide and exhausted, and she tried to focus on my face.
"Leave me with some supplies. The tarp, some food. Go get help."
"The school is looking for us," I said. "They'll find you."
"Then go fast.
It could take days. I'm not leaving you."
"What about the town?"
I paused, not knowing how to answer. Jane had cut her own flesh, the blackened tip of the sterilized razor blade splitting the skin and exposing the pink, bloody bone underneath. She'd winced, but hadn't hesitated. She'd done it before, dozens of times. Maybe hundreds.